It's Saturday, February 17th, 2018. The price of Bitcoin is $10,872, and you want to know who controls Bitcoin. I'm Josh Humphrey. You're listening to Bottom Shelf Bitcoin. Relax. Enjoy your coffee.
Okay. Hey, buddy. Good morning, everyone.
Okay. Welcome back to another episode of Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, the podcast that puts Bitcoin knowledge within everyone's reach. As always, I'm your host, Josh Humphrey, and today we're going to be talking about who controls Bitcoin. Now, that may seem like a silly question because, as we've said before, Bitcoin is outside the control of governments and can't be stopped by any one person or organization or bank or government, but there are people who influence it, right? The code has to be written by somebody. So we're going to be talking about that process and how that works and who gets to write that code and all of those kind of things and how that code is controlled. We'll get to all that here in a little while, but first, the market minute. All right, time for the market minute. Let's see here. Bitcoin price, like we said, $10,872, which puts the price of a penny at $1.08. 24-hour volume, 8.2 billion, which, or if you want to say it in Bitcoin, that's 792,000. Market cap of $183 billion. Coins in circulation is 16.8 million, and I know that's what it said last week, and that's because that 100,000s place hasn't changed over. It's actually, it is a higher number. I'm just not going to read you out to the ones place on how many coins in circulation. So I may not do coins in circulation every week from here on out because, you know, it's just, it doesn't change from one week to the next week, maybe every other week. Anyway. Meyer multiple is 1.29 with a 200-day moving average of $8,244.77. Transaction fee averages 36 satoshis per byte over the last 24 hours, an average of 39.6 satoshis per byte in the last 7 days. And man, these fees just keep getting less and less. Look at this, listen to this. Suggested fees, 5 satoshis per byte if you want your transaction in the next block, and 3 satoshis per byte if you're good with the next hour. Same day is 2.4 satoshis per byte. And honestly, there comes a point where the fee gets so low that it potentially is dangerously low. Sounds like scare tactics, so I'm not going to say dangerously low as far as there not being any kind of queue in the mempool, but we might like to see it a little higher for improved network security. I don't know. Local bitcoins, $53.9 million transacted globally in the last week, $6.7 million in the US. BISC network is $90,000 globally in the last week, with 15,900 of that coming from the US. The other thing is, I don't know if you guys saw my tweet, but we talked a couple weeks ago about a new decentralized exchange called HODL, and they have released their beta. They're open for testing. I have not used it yet, but it's out there. Go check them out and let me know if they're any good. All right, that's going to do it for our market minute. Okay, so like we said, we're going to be talking about who controls Bitcoin. And again, like we said, like I've said before, there is no one group or anything that controls it, but there are groups of people who have influence on this. You know, first of all, we have to acknowledge that the code, the original code and the white paper were put out by Satoshi Nakamoto. And we haven't really talked about Satoshi very much because I don't know that it matters so much for your day-to-day and whether or not you invest in it. I think it's relevant and it's good to know the story the what was going on that led up to this, the Cypherpunk email list and things like that. And maybe we'll get into that one day, or maybe I'll do that as some extra stuff on Patreon. But for now, all we're going to say is Satoshi is most likely a pseudonym. It may have been multiple people. We don't really know. After a couple of years, Satoshi stopped developing it and backed out from the development process. And that's actually probably a really good thing for Bitcoin, because there's no, people tend to have a messiah complex about leaders like that. And so there would be this temptation for everyone to just go with whatever Satoshi said. And so Satoshi not being present anymore in the development process actually frees it up to be what it should be. Now, let's talk about miners. Miners have the ability and the potential to have some influence on the ecosystem. Like, you know, if miners all of a sudden all got together and decided to stop mining, well, it would be very difficult for the system to go on. But really, that would only work if all the miners were working together in unison. And since that doesn't happen, and since at any point anyone with the right hardware could start mining, all it takes is one or two people to start mining outside of this unified group, and their whole effort is pointless. So they don't really truly have as much power as people might lead you to believe. So the other big influence is the people who actually write the code for Bitcoin. And so what we need to talk about today mostly is who writes that code? Who gets to write that code? Well, Bitcoin is open source. Open source means that the code is put in a place where anyone can access it, and it's viewable by anyone. You could go right now and view the code for Bitcoin. And when I say open source, the flip side of that would be something like Adobe or Microsoft, these big companies that have expensive proprietary software. You could not go to Adobe's website and ask them for the source code for Photoshop. The same thing for Microsoft Office. There are, however, open source alternatives to all of those. They just tend to be programs on Linux and not on Windows. Anyway, moving on. So the source code, and when we say the source code, we just mean the text files, the written words that when compiled create this program. The source code is posted online. For Bitcoin, it's hosted on GitHub. GitHub is a repository. It's a website that hosts a lot of open source projects, and it makes use of the Git protocol, G-I-T, Git. And that is a system, a protocol set up for version control. And version control, basically, I'll put a link to a video that kind of goes through what is Git and what is GitHub in the show notes, but version control, and there's several different protocols that do version control. There's Subversion and there's some other ones, but essentially what that allows you to do is host a project that you're working on in a central location where multiple people can have access to it and they can work on it at the same time. And version control is just a term used for any kind of program or system that is set up to keep people from basically overwriting each other's work. So if me and my friend are working on the same project and working on it at the same time, and I save a copy and then he saves a copy, and we both made changes to the same section at the same time, somebody's work is going to get overwritten when we both save it. And so version control helps mitigate that. It separates things out into different branches, and it will alert you if you're going, if it's got conflicting versions that are trying to be submitted at the same time. Like I said, I'll put a video in the show notes that explains it better. It's not really important for you to understand how Git works to understand that Bitcoin is open source. Anyone can view it. If you want, you can go to the GitHub repository for Bitcoin and you can submit a pull request. That basically means that you are requesting to pull down a copy of the code to your local computer. When you get that code on your computer, you can start adjusting and making changes to it and running it on your own machine and seeing if it works, seeing if the things that you have adjusted have helped make it better. And like I said, anyone can do this. Anyone can also submit a proposal called a Bitcoin Improvement Proposal, or BIP, B-I-P, and submit a proposal for a change in the way that the protocol works. And so if you do submit, if you submit a pull request and you make some changes and you get it to a stable point, then what you do is you push it back to the server. Your branch is what they call it. And that branch then is reviewed by a bunch of people. Hopefully a bunch of people. With Bitcoin, it is a bunch of people. So the other developers will look over it, read over your code, make suggestions if they think things need to be changed, and they will review it and say, yes, this is a good idea. No, this is not a good idea. Okay, this is a good idea, but the way you've coded it is going to conflict with this or that or whatever. And so maybe you change some more things, et cetera, et cetera. When you get a working branch that consensus, most people agree that, hey, this is a good idea, this is good code, it can then get incorporated into the main branch or the main code, and that will be incorporated in the next version release. There's a really good episode of the Noted podcast with Michael Goldstein and Pierre Richard, where they interview John Newberry. And John Newberry is one of the developers for the Bitcoin Core software. And he does a good job of kind of explaining the process. And so I'll link to that in the show notes. You should listen to that episode. I don't remember how long it is. But it does a really good job. He explains the process and kind of explains how Bitcoin Core, in his mind, is not a team of people. It's the process of how this code is updated and improved. And there's a lot of people that use the word Bitcoin Core to describe, and I do it too sometimes, to describe the group of people that's the core developers. But that's not really a single set of people. That's a loose association of people that changes over time. It's not set in stone. Hey, these guys are all together. It's not like they've made some secret blood pact where they're all going to stick together till the end of time and develop this code. They don't exclude outsiders. You know, they are people all over the world working on this. And it's a really cool thing. Again, all of this is, so much of this Bitcoin stuff is about decentralization. And decentralization, just for the record, is not the end game. Decentralization is the tool to accomplish censorship resistance. Okay, so back to, let's talk about if you submit a proposal, if you submit your code, it's reviewed. And ideally, it's reviewed by a lot of people. So there's a saying in computer science that with enough eyes, all bugs are shallow. And what that means is that the more people reviewing your code, the more people looking at it, reading it, commenting, giving you feedback, the less chance there is that a really critical, kind of fatal bug will be present in your final code. And this is something that a lot of altcoins and some wallets and just some projects in general, they don't get right. They don't have enough people looking at it. They don't have enough eyes. And when it comes production time, they haven't had enough people reading through it and looking for flaws. And it's not a malicious thing if someone says, hey, your code needs to be improved. Hey, you missed this big thing. Because the alternative is, if you look at something like Ethereum, Ethereum is an altcoin. And we'll talk about altcoins next week. But Ethereum suffers from this, and we'll talk about this more next week, but it suffers from this habitual problem where either Ethereum or big wallets in the Ethereum system or something along those lines will have these really horrible bugs that nobody catches because there's not enough people reading the code. There's not enough people looking through it to catch these bugs, and it gets released, and then this bug gets executed and tons of people lose money, or a few people lose a ton of money. And then they form this group and they decide, hey, we don't want to lose our money. So they commit a hard fork, which basically means they back up the blockchain and create a copy of the chain at a certain point and then kind of branch out to the side. And, you know, it's like trying to go back in time on money. And again, we'll talk about this more next week. I really don't want to get too into a tangent. But the problem with this is if you can do that and just fix it every time you lose money, then what's the point of things like Bitcoin 21 million coin cap, right? If you have a group of people that have the ability to just make this decision, then you're not decentralized, you're not censorship resistant, and really it's not sound money. And that's kind of the whole point of what Bitcoin is supposed to be. Okay, let's get back on track. So let's talk about concerns with development. We said anyone can write code for Bitcoin. And so there are people who volunteer and spend their time outside of their normal job to write code for Bitcoin because they believe in it. There are also companies who make products that depend on Bitcoin, and they specifically employ certain people to work on the Bitcoin core code development. And so because of this, people will accuse Bitcoin of just following whatever that company wants. Blockstream is an example that they throw out. We kind of talked about Blockstream a little bit the other day. They're the guys that have the satellites up in geosynchronous orbit that, you know, if you've got a spare dish lying around, you can line it up and pull down the blockchain off of their satellites. And they do some other stuff too. But they employ some core developers. And so there's this accusation that, oh, Bitcoin just follows, you know, Bitcoin used to be free and independent, and now it just follows anything that Blockstream wants. It is a valid concern to question the motives and the influences on Bitcoin. That is totally valid. But to persist in this idea and these accusations is silly. Because if you look at it, Blockstream's not the only group that employs developers, and there are other developers who work on it and aren't employed by Blockstream. And I would really encourage you to go listen to that episode with John Newberry of Noted, because he does a really good job of explaining that there's no one person within that group of developers. And again, that group of developers changes over time. And nobody has executive power in that group. It's not like there's one benevolent dictator or two or three people with all the power in the group and everybody else is just working for them and waiting for them to give the okay. That's not how it works. So to persist in this accusation is basically just to say, I don't like the direction that Bitcoin is going in, and I don't have anything valuable to contribute as a competition, or I don't have anything valuable to contribute to the product, to the project myself. So I'm going to stick my fingers in my ears and I'm going to shut my eyes and I'm just going to screech as loud as I can. And there are some altcoins. I'm thinking of one in particular that I'm not going to name. And that's basically what they do. And it's not helpful. You know, that coin is not technologically superior to Bitcoin and it has very few developers. And I don't want to generalize, and I'm not trying to be dramatic and political here, but that's my point, is that people want to get political, people want to get into Twitter fights, and it's like, just make better code. If you follow me on Twitter, not my personal account, but the Bottom Shelf Bitcoin account on Twitter, I retweeted something the other day that was talking about, you know, in open source projects, if you have a complaint with it, if you see something wrong with it, the proper response is to write code for it, to write better code and put your own influence into it and make it better. It's not to complain. And this is what I'm talking about. You know, if you have better ideas for the way that Bitcoin should be done, then you need to do one of two things. Because it's open source, because anyone can write code for it, then one, you should contribute, you know, submit an issue, raise the issue, submit a pull request, and start working on the code and submit your proposed changes to it. And if you feel like you've done that and nobody's listening to you, then, you know, go ahead, make an altcoin, see if you can make something better. Because there's a lot of people who talk bad about Bitcoin and they have no ability to make anything better. And that doesn't mean that if you don't have a particular skill set, you are incapable of seeing that things are wrong with it. That's not what I'm saying. But if all you're doing is complaining and whining, you're not fixing anything either, and you're becoming part of the problem. You know, there is this fantastic picture of Michael Phelps from the 2016 Rio Olympics. I think it was the 400-meter butterfly or something like that. And the picture, there's these pictures taken, and I'll see if I can find it and link to it. It's not the one where Michael Phelps is glaring at the guy, although that is funny. There's this picture, and it's Michael Phelps and Chad LaClose. And Michael Phelps, they're both heads out of the water, and they're within like 4 or 5 inches of each other. You know, anyone could take the lead at this point. And in the picture, Chad LaClose is looking at Michael Phelps. And I think leading up to this, they'd kind of had some simmering animosity, you know, just that athletic competition thing. Probably some name calling in the locker rooms or something, I don't know. But Chad LaClose is looking at Michael Phelps. And Michael Phelps is not looking back at him. Michael Phelps is looking at the other end of the swimming pool that he's going towards. And we could sit here and probably argue and debate whether that really had an effect or not. But Michael Phelps won the race and Chad LaClose finished fourth. And I've just always liked that image of if you are just sitting there staring at your competition, you're going to miss what you really need to be doing. And instead of focusing on LaClose, Michael Phelps was focusing on winning. And so, you know, it's the same thing in coding. If you're, or really most any product that you're making, if you're focused on your competition, you're going to miss some opportunities because you're not looking at what you should be working on. And instead, what you should just be focused on, you know, specifically in Bitcoin, and what they have done is they focused on writing better code. And we'll talk more about Lightning Network at some point. It's that's my favorite phrase on this podcast. We'll talk about this at some point in the future. There's just so much to go over, and the further we go, the more things come out, and so there's more things to talk about. And we just don't have unlimited time on each episode to talk about everything. You'd be here, it'd be like one long 48-hour podcast episode. But Lightning Network is a new technology that's been developed, and it's fast and it's fantastic, and it's not totally developed by the same group of core developers. There's some other people, but just as a whole, the Bitcoin community, instead of focusing this massive campaign to defend themselves against these baseless accusations, they just keep writing better code, keep creating a better product. Like I said, we are going to be talking next week about altcoins. And so this is a good way for you to kind of consider altcoins or really just other products and projects, especially if they're open source. First of all, if you're going to invest in any kind of cryptocurrency, which I'm of the mindset that none of them really stack up and do the same thing that Bitcoin does. And I don't look at it as this kind of stock day trading sort of thing. There's money to be made there if you do that, but there's also a lot of money to be lost. And there's a lot of people that have gotten totally wrecked trying to time the market and buy low and sell high, and it just doesn't always work out for them. I buy Bitcoin and I hold on to Bitcoin because I think it's going to take over. But if you feel like putting your money into altcoins or other projects, here's some things you should ask yourself and look at. First of all, is it open source? If it's not open source, if you can't read the code, and I don't mean do you possess the skill to read the code, although you should do that. If you can't access the code, that is not something you should be putting your money into as an investment. You know, even stocks, traditional stocks, if you buy stocks, you have the ability to go to meetings. And so much has been done with the internet that most of those meetings, if you own stock in that company, you have the ability to log in and view the meeting at least. Another thing to ask is how many people are contributing to this project? Not financially necessarily, although that's something to look at too, but who is and how many people are contributing to the development? How often is the code updated? Was it updated once, like 5 years ago, and it hasn't been touched since? Are they actual substantive updates? And then look and compare it to Bitcoin. You know, how often is this other project have pull requests? How many pull requests a week or a month do they have versus how many Bitcoin has? How many updates and content commitments do they have to improve the product? So those are things to consider. And If you're asking, hey, like, how can I contribute to this? If you want to contribute directly to the Bitcoin core code, then you need to understand C++ as a computer language, and you need to have a good command of the English language. And I assume if you're listening here on the fifth episode, you have a decent grasp of English. So I'm going to kind of assume that one, but C++ is the computer language that most of the Bitcoin stuff is written in. But, you know, there are also other projects, other wallets, other websites that are written in other computer languages. And there's some good resources out there that will teach you a lot of computer languages for free. Code Academy is a great one. It's an interactive thing where they will, you know, kind of teach you these different concepts and what the language and syntax structure of the code is, and give you interactive examples, and it will check your code for you and show you what that outputs. So I'll leave a link to Code Academy. If you know of some other ones, you know, hit me up on Twitter and I will put them in the resources page or in the show notes for this page too. All right, guys, that's our show for today. If you like the show, if you like what I'm doing here, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And share the episodes with your friends and your families and people you know on Facebook and Twitter or whatever. You can follow me on Twitter at BottomShelfBTC. And I've had some people send me some good stuff there that I've turned around and retweeted, some good videos and things like that. If you would like to help donate and support the show, because this is not my full-time job and getting support helps make it easier to do this, you can donate from my website, bottomshelfbitcoin.com/donate. And there is an address there that you can donate Bitcoin to if you have a PayNim enabled wallet. That's a BIP47 enabled wallet like Samurai. Otherwise, you can also be one of my patrons if you go to patreon.com/bottomshelfbitcoin. And I put a little surprise over there for the first person to sign up at the $5 level. I'm going to be doing some more just kind of fun, quirky, off-the-wall, Bitcoin-related stuff over there. And so that's where you're going to be able to get access to that stuff. All right, so come back next week. We're going to be talking about altcoins. What are they? Should you invest in them? That's going to do it for today, though. From Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, I'm Josh Humphrey. Thanks for listening.